Hi, this is Mrs. English. I'll be reading to you today from Homer's Odyssey, the Richmond Lattimore translation, Book 14. If you remember, Book 13 ended with a long conversation between Odysseus and Athena, and they went off their separate directions. Odysseus went off to find the faithful swineherd and test him out and see if what Athena said was true, and Athena took off to go get Telemachus and bring him back, now that Telemachus has gone and earned his own reputation. Book 14. But Odysseus himself left the harbor and ascended a rugged path through wooded country along the heights where Athena had indicated the noble swineherd, who beyond others cared for the house properties acquired by noble Odysseus. Line 5. He found him sitting in front on the porch where the lofty enclosure had been built, in a place with a view on all sides, both large and handsome, cleared all about, and it was the swineherd himself who had built it, to hold the pigs of his absent master, far from his mistress, and from aged Laertes. He made it with stones from the field, and topped it off with shrubbery. Outside he had driven posts in a full circle to close it in on all sides, set close together and thick, the dark of the oak split out from the logs. Inside the enclosure he made 12 pig pens next to each other for his sows to sleep in, and in each of them 50 pigs who sleep on the ground were confined. Line 15. These were the breeding females, but the males lay outside, and these were fewer by far, for the godlike suitors kept diminishing their numbers by eating them, since the swineherd kept having to send them in the best of all the well-fattened porkers at any time. Now they numbered 360, and 4 dogs, who were like wild beasts, forever were lying by them. These the swineherd, leader of men, had raised up himself, and now he was fitting sandals to his feet, cutting out a well-colored piece of ox-hide. Meanwhile, the other swineherds were out with the herded pigs, one place or another, 3 of them, but the 4th he had sent off to the city to take a pig to the insolent suitors, since they so forced him, so they could sacrifice it and glut their appetites on it. Suddenly, the wild baying dogs caught sight of Odysseus. Line 30. They ran at him with a great outcry, and Odysseus prudently sat down on the ground, and a staff fell out of his hand. But there, beside his own steading, he might have endured a shameful mauling, but the swineherd, quick and light on his feet, came hurrying to him across the porch, and let fall from his hand the shoe he was holding. Line 35. He shouted at the dogs and scared them in every direction with volleying showers of stones, and spoke then to his own master, "Hold, sir, the dogs were suddenly on you and would have savaged you badly, so you would have covered me with shame. But already there are other pains and sorrows the gods have bestowed upon me, for here I sit, line 40, mourning and grieving away for a godlike master, and carefully raised his fatted pigs for others to eat, while he, in need of finding some sustenance, wanders some city or countryside of alien-speaking people, if he still is alive somewhere and looks on the sunlight." And so here, of course, the swineherd doesn't know he is speaking to his old master. Line 45. "Come, old sir, along to my shelter, so that you also first may be filled to contentment with food and wine. Then tell me where you come from and about the sorrows you have been suffering." Homer is letting us know that not only has the swineherd been faithful, but he practices proper xenia, even though he's from one of the lowest classes of people. So spoke the noble swineherd, and led the way to the shelter, and brought him in, and seated him on brushwood piled up beneath, line 50, and spread over this the hide of a hairy wild goat from his own bed. This was great and thick, and Odysseus was happy at how he received him, and spoke a word and named him, saying, "May Zeus, stranger, and the other gods everlasting, grant you all you desire the most, for you have received me heartily." Then, O swineherd Emmaus. And here Homer shifts into first person in line 55, and he's talking directly to Eumaeus. "Then, O swineherd Eumaeus, you said to him in answer, 'Stranger,'" and of course it's a form of xenia, Zane. "'Stranger, I have no right to deny the stranger, the xenon, and not even if one came to me who was meaner than you, okay? Less, not even if somebody looked worse than you, and we can imagine that would probably be difficult to accomplish. All vagabonds and strangers," and of course these are more xenons, "are under Zeus, and the gift is a light and a dear one that comes to us, for that is the way of us who are servants and forever filled with fear when they come under power of masters who are new. The gods have stopped the homeward voyage of that one who cared greatly for me and granted me such possessions as a good-natured lord grants to the thrall of his house, a home of his own and a plot of land and a wife much sought after. When the man accomplishes much work and God speeds the labor as he has sped for me this labor to which I am given, so my lord would have done much for me if he'd grown old here, but he perished. So the swineherd is saying, if Odysseus had been here the last 20 years, I probably would have had a place of my own by now. I would have had a wife. He would have given me a wife. But he perished, as I wish Helen's seed could all have perished, pitched away, for she's unstrung the knees of so many men. Line 70. For in Agamemnon's cause, my master went also to Ilion, land of good horses, there to fight with the Trojans. He spoke and pulled his tunic too with his belt, and went out swiftly to his pig pens where his herds of swine were penned in, and picked out a pair and brought them in and sacrificed them, and singed them, and cut them into little pieces and spitted them, then roasted all and brought and set it before Odysseus, hot on the spits as it was, and sprinkled white barley over it, and mixed the wine, as sweet as honey, in a bowl of ivy, and set himself down facing him, and urged him on, saying, line 80, eat now, stranger, what we serving men are permitted to eat, young pigs, but the fattened swine are devoured by the suitors, who have no regard for anyone in their minds, no pity. The blessed gods have no love for a pitiless action, but rather they reward justice, and what men do that is lawful. Line 85. And though those are hateful and lawless men who land on an alien shore, and Zeus grants them spoil and plunder, when they have loaded their ships with it, they set sail away for home. For even in the minds of these there is stored some fear, which is stronger than on these there falls strong fear of how they may be regarded. But the suitors, you see, have heard some God-sent rumor, and they know about the dismal death of our man, and they will not decently make their suit, nor go home to their own houses, but at their ease they forcibly eat up his property and spare nothing. For as many as are the nights and the days from Zeus, on not one of these do they dedicate only a single victim, nor only two, and they violently draw the wine and waste it. See now, he had an endlessly abundant livelihood, and of course Eumaeus the swineherd is talking about Odysseus. Not one of the heroes over on the black mainland had so much. No one here on Ithaca, no 20 men together, had such quantity of substance as he. I will count it for you. And now we're going to get the accounting of how much Odysseus owned. And of course this is very important, so we know how important he is and famous and how wealthy he is. It's not much different than the accounting we have of Job, where his wealth is measured by his livestock. Line 100. 12 herds of cattle on the mainland, as many sheep flocks, as many troops of pigs, and again as many wide goat flocks and friends over there, and his own herdsmen pasture them for him. And here again, at the end of the island, 11 wide flocks of goats in all are pastured. Good men have these in their keeping. Line 105. And day by day each of these people brings in for the suitors a sheep, and each brings in the fatted goat that seems finest, and I myself keep watch on these pigs and guard them, and I too choose with care the best of the pigs and send it off to them. He spoke, and the other, Odysseus, ate his meat and drank his wine quietly, greedily, and without speaking, and devised evils for the suitors. So while Odysseus is eating here with the swineherd, who has not asked his name yet, he's sitting there eating, devising what he's going to do to these suitors in his house. But when he had dined and filled his desire with food, the other filled the cup in which he was drinking and handed it to him, all filled with wine. And he received it, and his heart was cheered. And he spoke to him then and addressed him in winged words, saying, "Dear friend," line 115, "who is the man who bought you with his possessions and is so rich and powerful as you tell me? You say he was one who perished in Agamemnon's cause. Then tell me, and perhaps I might know him if he was such a man. For Zeus knows, as do the other immortal gods, if I might have seen him and have some report to give you. I have wandered to many places." Then the swineherd, leader of men, said to him in answer, "Old sir, there's none who could come here bringing a report of him and persuade his wife and his dear son. And yet there are vain and vagabond men in need of sustenance who tell lies and are unwilling to give a true story, And any vagrant who makes his way to the land of Ithaca goes to my mistress and babbles his lies to her, and then she receives him well and entertains him and asks him everything, and as she mourns him, the tears run down from her eyes, since this is the right way for a wife when her husband is far and perished. So you too, old sir, might spin out a well-made story if someone would give you a cloak or tunic to wear for it, but for him, the dogs and the flying birds must by now have worried the skin away from his bones, and the soul has left them, or else the fish have eaten him out in the great sea, and his bones lie now on the mainland shore with the sand piled deeply upon them. And here we see Eumaeus as a little bit of a puddle glum. Of course, it has been 20 years, but he's saying that the birds and the dogs have probably picked his bones by now, or else he's at the bottom of the sea. So he has perished there. And sorrows are made for his dear ones all hereafter, and me most of all, for never again now will I find again a lord as kind as he, wherever I go, line 140, even if I could come back to my father and mother's house, where first I was born, and they raised me when I was little. But I do not so much mourn for this, but much though my longing is to behold them with these eyes, and in my own country, but the longing is on me for Odysseus. And he's gone from me, and even when he is not here, my friend, I feel some modesty about naming him, for in his heart he cared for me greatly and loved me. So I call him my master, though he is absent. Then long-suffering great Odysseus spoke to him in answer, "Dear friend, since you are altogether full of denial, you do not think he will come, line 150, and your heart is ever untrusting, but I will not speak in the same manner, but on my oath, tell you, Odysseus is on his way home. Let me have my reward for good news then, as soon as he has come back and enters his own house. Give me fine clothing, a cloak and tunic to wear. Before that, much as I stand in need of these, I will not accept them. Line 155. So because Eumaeus has just described the type of people who come to get cloaks and tunics and get fed for a long time because they tell Penelope they have news of her husband, he says, "Well, I have news of her husband, but don't give me anything so I don't appear like those men. Wait until Odysseus comes home, then give me all the things." Line 156. "For as I detest the doorways of death, I detest that man who, under constraint of poverty, babbles beguiling falsehoods." And, of course, that's what he's doing right now. Ironic. "Zeus be my witness, first of the gods, and the table of friendship." This is a table of Zenus. Zinnia, "and the hearth of blameless Odysseus, to which I come as a suppliant, all these things are being accomplished in the way I tell them. Sometime within this very year, Odysseus will be here. Either at the waning of the moon, or at its onset, he will come home and take his vengeance here upon any who deprives his wife and his glorious son of their due honor, of their due tine. Then, O swineherd Eumaeus," line 165, "you said to him in answer," and this is Homer speaking in the first person again, saying, "Then you, Eumaeus, you answered, Odysseus, 'Old sir, I will never pay you that gift for good news, nor will Odysseus come to this house again. Be easy and drink your wine. We will think of other matters. Do not then keep on reminding me of this, for the heart within me grieves whenever anyone speaks of my gracious master. So we will let your oath alone, but I hope that Odysseus will come back, as I wish, and as Penelope wishes, and Laertes, the old man too, and godlike Telemachus. But now I grieve unforgettingly for Telemachus, the son born to Odysseus," line 175. "The gods made him grow like a young tree, and I thought he would be among the men, not one inferior to his dear father, admirable for build and beauty. But some immortal upset the balanced mind within him, or else it was some man. He went away after news of his father to Pylos, the sacrosanct." And of course, that is where Nestor is the king. "And the haughty suitors are lying in wait for him as he comes home, to make Archaeus's stock and seed perish all the way and be nameless in Ithaca." This Archaeus is the father of Laertes. So we go from Archaeus, Archaeus, I'm slaughtering that, I'm sure, to his son Laertes, to his son Odysseus, to his son Telemachus. And so he's saying, of course, if Telemachus dies, and Odysseus is already dead, he believes, and Laertes is near death, and Archesius is already dead, then, of course, Odysseus' seed will all die, and he will not leave his name. His name will not survive. Now we will let him be, however, whether they catch him or whether he escapes, and the son of Cronos protects him. But come now, aged sir, recite me the tale of your sorrows, and tell me this too, tell me truly, so that I may know it. What man are you, and whence? Where is your city, your parents? What kind of ship did you come on here? And how did the sailors bring you to Ithaca? What men do they claim that they are? The swineherd Aeneas has practiced proper xenia, because he waited until he had completely fed his guest before he asks any of these things. Line 190. For I do not think you could have traveled on foot to this country. Then resourceful Odysseus spoke in turn and answered him, See, I will accurately answer all that you ask me. I only wish there were food enough for the time for us two, and sweet wine for us here inside of the shelter, so that we could feast quietly while others tended the work. Then easily I could go on for the whole of a year and still not finish the story of my heart's tribulations. All that hard work I have done in my time because the gods willed it. Odysseus says here, there isn't enough food for us to sit here and gab and eat, for me to tell you the entire story that you just asked, all these questions you just asked me. I announce that my origin is from Crete, and of course this is appropriate for a liar. A spacious land, line 200, I am son of a rich man, and there were many other sons who were born to him and reared in his palace. These were lawful sons by his wife, but a bought woman, a concubine, was my mother. Yet I was favored with the legitimate sons by Castor, Hylacus's son, whom I claim as father, honored among the Cretans in the countryside as a god is, in those days, for wealth and power and glorious children. But then, you see, the death spirits caught and carried him from us to the house of Hades. He died, and his overbearing sons divided the livelihood among them and cast lots for it. Little enough, however, was what they gave me in goods and houses, because he's the illegitimate. But I took for myself a wife from people with many possessions, because of my courage, for I was no contemptible man, not one who fled from the fighting, but not now all that is gone from me. But still, I think, if you look at the stubble, that you see what the corn was like when it grew. Okay, you can look at what's left of me, and you ought to be able to tell I was a good man. But since then, hardship enough has had me. Ares and Athena endowed me with courage, that power that breaks men in battle. Whenever I detailed the best fighters to go into ambush, planned evil things for the enemy, the proud heart in me had no image of death before it. Line 220. But far the first, I would leap out with my spear, bring down that enemy man whose speed of foot failed him against me. Such was I in the fighting, but labor was never dear to me, nor care for my house, though that is what raises glorious children, but ships that are driven on by our oars were dear to me always, and the wars, and throwing spears with polished hafts, and the arrows, gloomy things, which to other men are terrible, and yet those things were dear to me, which surely some god had put there in my heart, for different men take joy in different actions. And so here he's describing himself to Aeneas as the opposite of what he is. I loved to go to war. I just wasn't interested in keeping a home and having a wife and family. Line 229. Before the sons of the Achaeans embarked for Troy, I was 9 times a leader of men and went in fast-faring vessels against outland men, and much substance came my way. And from this I took out an abundance of things, but much I allotted again, and soon my house grew greater. And from that time on I went among the Cretans as one feared and respected. But when Zeus of the wide brows devised for us that hateful expedition, which unstrung the knees of so many men, they were urgent upon me and renowned Idomeneus to lead with the ships to Ilion, to Troy. And there was no remedy, nor any refusing, for the hard speech of the people constrained us. Line 240. Then, for 9 years we sons of the Achaeans fought there, and in the 10th year we sacked the city of Priam, and went back homeward with our ships, and the gods scattered the Achaeans. But for wretched me, Zeus of the councils devised more hardships. 1 month only I stayed, taking pleasure in my children, and my wedded wife, and my possessions. I was only home a month. But then the spirit within me urged me to make an expedition to Egypt, with ships well appointed, and with my godlike companions. I appointed 9 ships, and rapidly the people were gathered, and for 6 days then my eager companions continued feasting, but I provided them with abundant victims for sacrifice to the gods, and for themselves to make ready their feast. On the 7th day we went aboard, and from wide Crete sailed on a north wind that was favorable and fair. It was easy, like sailing downstream, so that never a single one of my ships was hurt, line 255, and we, unharmed, without sickness, sat still, and let the wind and the steersmen hold them steady. On the 5th day we reached the abundant stream, Aegyptus, this is the Nile River, and I stayed my oar-swept ships inside the Aegyptus River. Then I urged my eager companions to stay where they were, there, close to the fleet, and to guard the ships, and was urgent with them to send lookouts to the watching places, but they, following their own impulse and giving way to marauding violence, suddenly began plundering the Egyptians' beautiful fields, and carried off the women and innocent children, and killed the men, and soon the outcry came to the city, line 265. And of course Odysseus is just telling lies, but he is telling how he lost everything, and how it took so long, and why he's alone. They heard the shouting, and at the time when dawn shows, they came on us, and all the plain was filled with horses and infantry and the glare of bronze, and Zeus, who delights in thunder, flung down a foul panic among my companions, and none was so hardy as to stand and fight, for the evils stood in a circle around them. They killed many of us with the sharp bronze, and others they led away alive to work for them in forced labor. But Zeus himself put this thought into my mind, as I will tell you, but how I wish I had died and met my destiny there in Egypt, line 275, for there was still more sorrow awaiting me. At once I put the well-wrought helm from my head, the great shield off my shoulders, and from my hand I let the spear drop, and went out into the way of the king, and up to his chariot, and kissed his knees, and clasped them. He rescued me, and took pity, and seated me in his chariot, and took me, weeping, homeward with him. And indeed, many swept in on me with ash spears, straining to kill me, for they were all too angered. But the king held them off from me, and honored the anger of Zeus, protector of strangers. And of course, these are Xenias, strangers, who beyond others is outraged at evil doings. So his men attacked the women and the innocent children in line 264, made all the townspeople furious. Of course it wasn't his fault. And when the people came and they had to fight them, when he saw the king, he dropped all of his armor, his shield, his spear, everything, and went and supplicated the king, who took him on as a Xenus, as a stranger. But even as they are going back probably to the palace, there are people trying to kill him. That's what he's just told us. Line 285. There for 7 years I stayed and gathered together much substance from the men of Egypt, for all gave to me. But when in the turning of time the 8th year had befallen me, then there came a Phoenician man, well skilled in beguilements, a gnawer at others' goods, and many were the hurts he inflicted on men, and by his wits talked me over. So I went with him to Phoenicia, where lay this man's house and possessions. There for the fulfillment of a year I stayed with him. But when the months and when the days had come to completion, with the circling back of the year again and the seasons came on, then he took me on his seafaring ship to Libya, line 295, with lying advices, that with him we could win a cargo, but in fact, so he could sell me there and take the immense price for me. I went with him on his ship, forced to, although I suspected all, on a north wind that was favorable and fair, above the middle of Crete, line 300, but Zeus was plotting these men's destruction. But after we had left Crete behind us, and there was no more land in sight, but only the sky and the sea, then Cronian Zeus drew on a blue-black cloud and settled it over the hollow ship, and the open sea was darkened beneath it. Line 305. Zeus, with thunder and lightning together, crashed on our vessel, and, struck by the thunderbolt of Zeus, she spun in a circle, and all was full of brimstone. The men were thrown in the water, and bobbing like sea crows, they were washed away on the running waves, all around the black ship, and the god took away their homecoming. But Zeus himself, though I had pain in my heart, then put into my hands the giant mast of the ship, with dark prows, so that I could still escape the evil, and I, embracing this, was swept along before the destructive storm winds. Doesn't that sound familiar? 9 days I was swept along, and on the 10th, in black night, line 315, The great wave rolling washed me up on the shore of Thesprotia. This is some type of a district on the coast of Epirus. And this is where the oracle of Dodona was. Another oracle like that at Delphi. This is where you would go to Apollo for some type of word, the oracle of Dodona. There, the king of the Thesprotians, the hero Phaedon, had looked after me without price, for his own dear son had come on me when I was beaten by weariless and cold air. This means that the king, the hero Phaedon, would have taken Odysseus and ransomed him, but because his own son had found Odysseus and had extended Xenia to him, he didn't. And so he looked after me without price. For his own dear son had come on me when I was beaten by weariness and cold air, and lifted me up by the hands, and led me home to the house of his father, 9320, and put a mantle and tunic about me to wear as clothing. It was there I had word of Odysseus, for this king told me he had feasted and friended him on his way back home to his own country, and he showed me all the possessions gathered in by Odysseus, bronze and gold and difficultly wrought iron. Truly, that would feed a succession of heirs to the 10th generation, such are the treasures stored for him in the house of the great king. But he said Odysseus had gone to Dodona to listen to the will of Zeus out of the holy deep-leaved oak tree. As a side note, at Delphi, on the side of Mount Parnassus, you would approach the oracle, bring some type of an offering, and the Pythian priestess would sit on her tripod and inhale the natural gas fumes, and then give an ambiguous prophecy. That's how you'd hear the word of the god. Here at Dodona, at the Oracle of Dodona, they listened to the leaves rustling in this oak tree, and this is how you would hear the god speak. And so Odysseus had gone to Dodona to listen to the will of Zeus out of the holy deep-leaved oak tree. For how he could come back to the rich countryside of Ithaca, in secret or openly, having been by now long absent. And he swore to me in my presence, as he poured out a libation in his house, that the ship was drawn down to the sea, and the crew were ready to carry Odysseus back again to his own dear country. But before that he sent me off, for a ship of Thesprotian men happened then to be sailing for Dulichion, rich in wheat fields. So he urged them to convey me there to the king Acastus in a proper way. So Odysseus, disguising himself, says, I almost saw Odysseus. I saw all the treasure he's going to bring home, enough to support 10 generations of people. In fact, they were just getting ready to take him home. That's how I know he's almost home. All right. So he urged them to convey me there to the king Acastus in a proper way. But, so he sends him on his way, but the people who take him, but their hearts were taken with a bad counsel concerning me. So I still should have the pain of affliction. So when the seafaring ship had gone far out from the mainland, they presently devised the day of slavery for me. They took off me the mantle and tunic I wore as clothing, and then they put another vile rag on me and a tunic tattered, the one you see yourself here with your eyes. At evening time they made their way off the fields of sunny Ithaca, and there they tied me fast in the strong benched ship, with a rope's end twisted and tightly about me, and themselves, disembarking, speedily took their evening meal on the sand of the seashore. But the very gods themselves untied the knots that were on me easily, and I, wrapping my head in a rag, climbed down the polished plank that was there for loading, and let my chest into the sea, then struck out with both my arms, and thus swimming I was very soon out of the water, and close to where they were. Then I went up, where there was a growth of flowering thicket, and lay there cowering. They, without cry, great and sorrowful, came back to search, but then it seemed there was no more profit in looking for many longer, and so they went back, boarding their hollow ship again. But it was the gods who concealed me easily, and it was they who brought me here to the steading of an understanding man. So now life is still my portion. There Odysseus finishes his long, lying tale. So he doesn't have a ship. He was brought here to be sold as a slave. He escaped with the gods' help. They looked for him and they took off. So he is here alone. Line 360. Then, O swineherd Eumaeus, and this is Homer, speaking first person to the swineherd basically, you said to him in answer, O sorrowful stranger, truly you troubled the spirit in me by telling me all these details, how you suffered and wandered. Yet I think some part is in no true order, and you will not persuade me in your talk about Odysseus. Why should such a man as you are lie recklessly to me? But I myself know the whole truth of what my lord's homecoming is, how all the gods hated him so much that they did not make him go down in the land of the Trojans, nor in the arms of his friends after he wound up the fighting. So all the Achaeans would have heaped a grave mound over him, and he would have won great fame, Megacleos, for himself and his son hereafter, but now ingloriously. And of course this is a form of what would be Achaeos, ingloriously, the opposite of glorious. Now ingloriously the storm winds have caught and carried him. But I keep away and with my pigs, and I do not now go to the city unless circumspect Penelope, for some reason, asks me to go when word comes in from one place or another. And there are those who sit beside me and question me over particulars, whether they are grieving for a lord long absent or happy at eating up his substance without recompense. But I have no liking for this inquiry and asking of questions, since that, I don't like it when I have to go question people and see if they really knew my old master. Not since that time an Aetolian man beguiled me by telling a story. This one had killed a man and wandered over much country. And this is very interesting that he chooses that the man who tricked Eumaeus the swineherd was an Aetolian man. Remember this. This one had killed a man and wandered over much country. He came to my house and I entertained him fondly. He said he had seen him, Odysseus, with Idomeneus among the Cretan men repairing his ships, for the storm winds had smashed them, and he said he would be coming back in the summer or autumn, bringing in many possessions, and with his godlike companions. You too, old man of many sorrows, since the spirit brought you here to me, do not try to please me nor spell me with lying words. It is not for that that I will entertain and befriend you, but for fear of Zeus, the god of guests, the god of Xenia, and for my own pity. So Eumaeus says, you don't have to lie and pretend like you knew Odysseus or saw him or heard of him or saw treasure. You do not have to do that. I practice Xenia. I will take care of you because that's what I'm supposed to do. Line 390. Then resourceful Odysseus spoke in turn and answered him, truly the mind in you is something very suspicious. Not even with an oath can I bring you around nor persuade you. Come now, we two shall make an agreement, and for the future the gods who hold Olympus shall be witnesses to both sides. As your lord makes his homecoming into his palace here, you shall give me a tunic and mantle to wear and send me on my way to Dulichion, where my heart has been desiring to go. But if your lord never comes in the way I tell you he will, set your serving men on me and throw me over a high cliff, so the next vagabond will be careful and not lie to you. So throw me over a cliff as an example. Line 401. Then in turn the glorious swineherd spoke to him in answer, that would be virtuous of me, my friend, and good reputation. That would be virtuous of me, my friend, my Zenus, and good reputation, give me good erete, would be mine among men, for present time alike and hereafter. If first I led you into my shelter, there entertained you as guest, then murdered you and ravaged the dear life from you, then cheerfully I could go and pray to Zeus, son of Kronos. So the swineherd Eumaeus is being very sarcastic here. But now it is time for our dinner, and I hope my companions come in soon, so we can prepare a good dinner here in my shelter. So these two remained conversing this way together. Line 410. And the sows came up, and with them came the men who were swineherds, and they pinned the sows for the night inside their accustomed places, and an endless clamor went up from the crowding swine. Thereafter the glorious swineherd gave the word to his own companions, bring in the best of the pigs to sacrifice for our stranger, our Zenus, our stranger guest from afar, and we ourselves shall enjoy it, we who long have endured this wretched work for the pigs with shining teeth, while others at no cost eat up what we have worked on. So he spoke, and with the pitiless bronze split kindling, and the men brought in a pig, 5 years old, and a very fat one, line 420, and made it stand in front of the fireplace, nor did the swineherd forget the immortal gods, for he had the uses of virtue. But he cut off hairs from the head of the white-toothed pig and threw them into the fire as dedication, and prayed to all the gods that Odysseus of the many designs should have his homecoming. And of course the thing that he is praying for has already been accomplished. Line 425. He hit the beast with a split of oak that he had lying by him. The breath went out of the pig, then they slaughtered him and singed him, then jointed the carcass, and the swineherd lay pieces of raw meat, with offerings from all over the body upon the thick fat, and sprinkled these with meal of barley, and threw them in the fire. Then they cut all the remainder into pieces, and spitted them, and roasted all carefully, and took off the pieces, and laid it all together on platters. The swineherd stood up to divide the portions, for he was fair-minded, and separated all the meat into seven portions. At one, line 435, one he set aside with a prayer for the nymphs and Hermes. Now, of course, the nymphs we know are local deities from this cave, and to Hermes, because Hermes is the god of herdsmen. Hermes, the son of Maia, and the rest he distributed to each man, but gave Odysseus in honor of the long cuts of the chines portion. And, of course, the chines portion is the best cut. And he gives this to Odysseus because he is his guest. So he gave Odysseus in honor of the long cuts of the chines portion of the white-toothed pig, and so exalted the heart of his master. Then resourceful Odysseus spoke to him and addressed him, "I wish, Eumaeus," line 440, "you could be as dear to our father, Zeus, as to me, when I am so poor, but you grace me with good things." Okay, he's wishing a blessing on him, really, hoping that Eumaeus could mean as much to Zeus as Eumaeus means to him, because of how kind he is. "Then, O swineherd Eumaeus," Homer, using first person again, "you said to him in answer, 'Eat my guest, a strange man that you are, and take your pleasure of what is here now. The god will give you such, or will let it be as in his own mind he may wish. He can do anything.' He spoke, and sacrificed first offerings to the immortal gods, then poured bright wine for Odysseus, sacker of cities, and put the cup in his hands, and sat down to his own portion. Mesilius served the bread to them, a man whom the swineherd owned himself, by himself and apart from his absent master, and independently of his mistress and aged Laertes, having bought him from the Typhians with his own possessions. They put forth their hands to the good things that lay ready before them. But when they had put away their desire for eating and drinking," line 455, "Mesilius took the food away again, and they made haste to go to bed, filled with bread and meat to repletion. A bad night came on, the dark of the moon, and Zeus rained all night long, and the west wind blew big, all was watery. Odysseus spoke among them. He was trying it out on the swineherd." So Odysseus is testing the swineherd again. This time he's going to test him and see just how far will the swineherd extend Xenia to this raggedy, old, elderly man who has nothing. "He was trying it out on the swineherd," line 460, "to see if he might take off his mantle and give it him, or tell one of his men to do it, since he cared for him so greatly. Hear me now, Eumaeus, and all you other companions. What I say will be a bit of boasting. The mad wine tells me to do it. Wine sets even a thoughtful man to singing, or sets him into softly laughing, sets him to dancing. Sometimes it tosses out a word that was better unspoken. But now I've broken into loud speech, I will not suppress it. I wish I were young again, and the strength still steady within me, as when under Troy we formed an ambush detail and led it." Line 470. "The leaders were Odysseus and Atreus' son Menelaus, and I made a third leader with them, since they themselves asked me. But when we had come underneath the city and the steep wall, we, all about the city in marshy ground, and the dense growth of swamp grass and reeds, and huddling under our armor, and we lay there, and a bad night came on, with a rush of the north wind freezing, and from above came a fall of snow, chilling like frost, and on the shield's edges the ice formed, rimming them. There all the other men were wearing both mantles and tunics, and they slept at ease, pulling their great shields over their shoulders. But I," line 480, "in my carelessness, when I started with my companions, had left my mantle. I never thought I would be so cold, but went along with only my shield and my shining waist guard. But when it was the third time of the night, and after the star change," and that means almost morning, "then I spoke to Odysseus, for he was lying next to me," line 485, "nudging him with my elbow, and he listened at once. I said, 'Son of Laertes and seed of Zeus, resourceful Odysseus, I shall no longer be left among the living, The weather is too much for me. I have no mantle. The spirit made me silly to go half-dressed, and now there is no escape for me. Line 490. So I spoke, and he immediately had an idea in his mind. Such a man he was for counseling. As for fighting, he spoke to me in a little voice and said a word to me. Be quiet now. Let no other of the Achaeans hear you. Then he propped his head on his elbow and spoke a word out loud. Hear me, friends. In my sleep, a divine dream came to me. We've come too far away from the ships. Now, would there be someone to tell Agamemnon, Atreus' son, shepherd of the people, so he might send more of the men by the ships to come here to us? And so this is, of course, Odysseus disguised, telling a story of a time when they're very close to Troy, and he was cold during the night, and Odysseus got somebody tricked into going to get something for him. So he spoke, and Thoas sprang up, the son of Andraemon. This Thoas, if you have any interest in that, he's in the Iliad, he's in Book 2, at line 638. He led the contingent to Troy, he had 40 ships, the Aetolian contingent. So this guy is young. He springs up, the son of Andraemon, quickly, and took off and laid aside his red mantle, line 501, and went on the run for the ships. Okay, so he throws off his clothes and he goes running to go do exactly what Odysseus asked him. And I lay down in his clothes happily and rested until dawn of the golden throne came. And so that's how Odysseus got him, this old man, stranger, who's sitting here with Eumaeus, or lying here with Eumaeus and his men. That's how Odysseus got him clothes, even warm clothes. I wish I were young like that and the strength still steady within me. Some one of the swineherds in this house would give me a mantle, both for love and out of respect for a strong warrior. Line 506. Now they slight me because I wear vile clothing upon me. Then, O swineherd Eumaeus, you said to him in answer, Old sir, that was a blameless fable the way you told it, and you've made no unprofitable speech, nor one that missed the point. So you shall not lack for clothes, nor anything rightfully due the unhappy suppliant who approaches us. So he says, Wow, you've got the way with words, Kay, you're not going to lack clothing. For now, that is. You must flaunt your rags again in the morning. Now, there are not many extra mantles and extra tunics here to change into. There's only one set for each man. When, however, the dear son of Odysseus comes back, he will give you a mantle and tunic to wear as clothing, and send you wherever your heart and spirit desire to be sent. And now Odysseus knows that his son also practices proper xenia. So he spoke and sprang up and laid a bed for him next to the fire, and threw the fleeces of sheep and goats over it. There Odysseus lay down, line 520, and he threw over him a mantle that was great and thick, which he kept by him as an extra covering to wrap in when winter weather came on and was too rigorous. And so now the swineherd has placed Odysseus, who looks like an old, old, fragile man, he's put him right by the fire and covered him all up. So there Odysseus went to bed, and the young men beside him lay down also to go to sleep. Only the swineherd did not please to leave his pigs and go to bed indoors, but made preparations as he went out. Where does the swineherd sleep? Indoors with the other swineherds and his guests? No. He is such a good slave and such a happy slave for his master Odysseus, who's been gone 20 years. He sleeps outside with the pigs. And Odysseus was happy that his livelihood was so well cared for while he was absent. First, the swineherd slung his sharp sword on his heavy shoulders and put a very thick mantle about him to keep the wind out, and took up also the hairy skin of a great well-conditioned goat, line 531, and took up a sharp javelin as a protection against men and dogs, and went to sleep where his pigs, with shining teeth, lay in the hollow of a rock, sheltered from the north wind. And that is the end of Book 14.